they gave a serious threat, like either you leave the country or you or some of your members of family will be dead.
Today's guest is from Iraq, grew up in the war, and he talks a lot about relationships.
If you're good with your wife, you're probably gonna forget about how to handle the rest. Because I used to hear it from my ex, like, I am your mirror, so if I'm behaving bad with you, it's because of you. They are protectors. They understand that men have to provide financially and not accept a woman to provide anything or bring anything in the table. This is the biggest difference between the Arab men and the Western men.
He has a very strong opinion on men. He thinks that men are weak and they should be stronger.
That's where people fail, and that's where a relationship gets broken. It's not because of the women are evolving, it's because of the men, they're not being men. Having a cigar, misbehaving. He's a man probably, but not a gentleman. I started proving to people who doubted me that it is possible. Closing the gaps and jumping into each other's playground area probably brings the two closer together.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode of the podcast in partnership with the Megaverse. More about them later. Now, if you haven't already subscribed to the show, I suppose my next question is why? And the question after that is, would you be so kind to? It really matters to us that you do subscribe, because the more eyeballs we get on this, the better the guests I can bring to you. So please do me a favor, give it a like, give it a follow, give it a subscribe, whatever it takes. If you can do that one small thing for me, I will be eternally grateful. Megaverse, the digital frontier of tomorrow. Megaverse stands at the cutting edge intersection of technology and imagination. It's a virtual realm where the limitless expanse of the digital universe unfolds, offering users unparalleled experiences and interactions. With its advanced metaverse platform, users can craft unique avatars, forge connections, and even establish their own digital estates. It's more than just virtual reality. Megaverse is an expansive digital civilization teeming with opportunities for both individuals and brands. From immersive concerts to revolutionary retail experiences, Megaverse is redefining the way we engage with the digital world. As we stand on the brink of a new era where the lines between our physical reality and the digital realm blur, Megaverse is poised to lead the charge in this brave new world. Dive in and discover a universe without bounds. This really is the future. Today's guest is from Iraq, grew up in the war, and he talks a lot about relationships. He has a very strong opinion on men in relationships. He thinks that men are weak and they should be stronger, but he also thinks that there's a lot more that men can do to make women happy. And that is what we're going to talk about today. Cue the music for Saif Al-Yazzi. Saif, thanks very much for coming to join us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Spencer.
It's always a bit weird when you got another podcaster on. It's kind of like, should we do the podcast conversation? Yeah. And I think that there's so many people out there that don't have a podcast, I've never had a podcast, but when you're with other podcasters, it feels like a normal thing to do, doesn't it?
It is, yeah.
So you've got an interesting story. Take me back, for the benefit of everyone that watches this podcast, to your journey, because I want to dig into your childhood, I want to dig into how you grew up and the challenges that you faced before we then move into the more modern stuff that you've experienced. But young boy, born in Iraq, but as a kid moved across to the UK, into London, lived there. So I suppose your memories as a youngster were only London at first.
Yeah, that's true. Even the first spoken language was English for me. And I still remember my father at home. He used to carry the pan for me and my sister, who's 2 years younger than me. We only spoke English at home. So he was like, no, you need to speak Arabic at home. English is outside and with your friends at school, but home is English on, Arabic. So first spoken language was English, and then I struggled with the Arabic, the proper Arabic, until I returned back to Iraq in the 1990. And there I was like, okay, I'm an alien in my home country. So I had to adapt. So I had to go to meet the guys who were like the gangsters in the at school, like the bad boys, who were like, okay, teach me everything you know. No, I'm ready. I'm a sponge. So yeah, I managed to adapt and learn the proper Iraqi Arabic accent and culture as well, very quickly. And I'm not an alien anymore.
Yeah. You were an alien in England, and then you were an alien in Iraq at first as well. So did you ever feel like you didn't fit in when you were in England?
I think I got adopted. Even I'm an alien here right now.
Oh, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
And that's what people, when they ask me, like, who are you? I'm like, I'm an alien. And I look them in the eyes, like, with a straight face. I am. I grew up as one, yeah.
So you living in London. Just talk to me about how it was. You praying near the local mosque, that all that stuff regularly or not really?
When
you were young.
Yeah, we used to go. My father, I still remember, he used to come and take me out from school for me to practice the ritual, like to see the environment as Muslims in the UK to go. It was a nice experience because it was a big park. We used to enjoy that time over there. So it was a fun activity for me to meet people and to do the Friday mosque thing.
So, Friday mosque thing. So living that life, don't really know anything. You're a kid, aren't you? It's just life, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
In the first 10 years old, you go back to live in Iraq.
Yeah.
In Baghdad?
In Baghdad.
What was the landscape like as a 10-year-old in Baghdad? Just paint a picture so people only know what they've seen on the TV and the news, but what was it like for you?
It was more, I would say, like family. The gatherings was everything that I remember going back, because I grew up in the UK. It's just me, my father, and my younger two sisters. And going back there, we had all our relatives around, all our neighbors around. Like dinners, lunch, gatherings. The house was never empty. There was always a fun gathering, home activity to meet all your relatives, and they're massive. As any Iraqi or any Arab probably, it's all about how many people you have within your tribe, and they all have to see each other. There's always an occasion that you have to attend. There's all, to a certain level that sometimes it's a bit too much, mm-hmm. but this is part of the tradition in this culture. And yeah, the rest was like, I was trying to run away from this activities, trying to go out with the friends and to meet people, to have some kind of different style of Iraq. What are my friends? Growing up as a teenager also in Iraq was quite different. The school, we changed a lot of locations. So for me, it was always there's something new, a group of people who are new that I had to meet and regain. So I gained this experience of probably knowing how to socialize quickly and adapt in a place that I'm new at. And it was fun.
So what was the environment though? You had this family, but what was the environment? Was there war about to start? Had war already started? Was it a long way away from you? Did you feel it, hear it, sense it, suffer it?
We felt everything, yeah. So the moment we came back from the UK to Baghdad, it was the start after 2 weeks, I still remember, I think, the invasion of Kuwait. And then the first Gulf War started at that time. So everything was chaotic after that. And then when the moment the first Gulf War was about to quite end, we had the civil war. So for those who are in the regime today, they were like trying to attack Saddam's regime at that time. And they almost took 10 provinces about Iraq out of the 18. So then Saddam had to march his armies and be liberating these areas from them. So we were in both this side and that side, moving from this area to that area. We lost houses, we lost people. So I grew up watching this as a normal kid who lived in that time. So this was like part of somehow fun and weird, and like, because fun, there's no school. That was interesting for us. And we were just playing and meeting new friends and playing. But watching our parents suffer and go through difficult times, sleeping in the car, building tents randomly in the streets, and opening schools to go and sleep inside the classrooms on the floor, having showers in the bathrooms, which was terrible. I still remember, like, I went to the shower and there was a small curtain there, and we were after playing football with the kids in the school. The curtain fell off while I was taking a shower, and the kids made fun of me because I had no one around me to save me. So these kind of moments, this is what happened. And then we moved away until we came back to home. And then we took our breaths for a couple of years. And then after that, another war started, and again and again. So, you know, until the last one was when the fall of the regime happened in 2003. I was just graduating from university, working in a company, which was a medical equipment company. And since the government fell, U.S. Army took over. So we still had to work, visit hospitals, visit government. So the government at that time was the American Army. So I made contacts with them. And some of the groups of opposing terror, not terrorists, I wouldn't say terrorists, but people who were trying to liberate Iraq from the American Army, thought that we were spies or we were people who betrayed Iraq and went to the American side. So they came and attacked our company and killed a few of our fellows, colleagues, and tried to attack us in the streets, monitored us until like they gave us serious threat, like either you leave the country or you or some of your members of family will be dead. So it was that serious that I had to take a ticket to the closest country, and it was UAE, and I left the country.
And you've been back since?
I've been back after many years when it was safe for me to go back. Yeah.
So when you look back at those times, I mean, we see a lot in the news at the moment with what's happening with Palestine and, you know, bombs being thrown at places and buildings being blown up and people being displaced and, you know, the horrors that exist there, which, you know, are unimaginable for me because I've never been exposed to something like that. But when you look at it and you see it, does it take you back to some experiences you have?
I try not to go there, but for me, I know the feeling of what they're going through. And I'm just like, okay, I don't want to watch this. And this is normal for me. Just like what we had offline when we talked about the operation room, and I told you, like, for you, probably it's a nightmare to watch an operation, but for me, it's normal because I see this every day. So it's the same thing. Wars, for me, when I see it on TV, I avoid watching, first of all, news and any negativity. I try not to consume. In my head, I had enough. I try to look on the other side. But it's always there, and if it, I come across any kind of video or content that looks like this, I have the feeling, but I just don't want to go back immediately. I probably practice my mind to skip this very quickly. Yeah.
What did you study at university?
So my bachelor's degree is biology/biotechnology, which is genetic engineering. Yeah. And when in UAE, I completed my master's in marketing. So I have a major in marketing, MBA. And I studied also fitness and nutrition. So I have a master's degree in bodybuilding and nutrition and a few certificates here and there.
What did you want to be?
That's a new question from your side. I wanted to be an architecturer.
Interesting.
Yes.
Completely different to everything you studied.
Absolutely.
Why?
I like drawing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm good at it.
Uh-huh.
But I stopped for probably the last 20 years. I didn't touch any pencil.
So why did you not become an architect if that's what you wanted?
My father didn't want me to be. He wanted me to be a doctor like him. And I was fighting against that. So, you know, in high school, the last senior year before you decide where to go, your marks decide where you have to go. So I was trying to play in the mat and my final exam, not to get the highest mark, not to be forced by my father to go into the medical school. But medical school and architecture was very close in the score that you have to get. So I was trying to lower my score. I was very good at studying. So I was trying to lower my scores, not to be in the medical, like whether pharmaceutical, dentistry, or medical, but to be in the engineering part, to be accepted to be an architecture. I couldn't manage to get both because my marks were a bit lower than that. So he's like, okay, you're not going to any engineering. You're going to go to biology. And in biology first year, there was a law. If you are one of the first highest top three, you can go the next year to medical school. Obviously, university for me was a new experience because in high school in Iraq, we're separated boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
So you grow up from junior high school, only boys. And then in university, it's mixed. For me, this was a moment to meet girls and women in the university. So I didn't pay attention that much to studying.
Were you good at relationships back then? Were you a handsome, were you a fine figure of a human being? Were you good?
Now, I look like this now. So I'm like wine now. The older I get, the better.
The future's bright then.
It is very much, yes. No, I mean, I was good. I was okay with relationships. Yeah, I would say I was okay. Building up.
You don't need too confident.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first serious relationship?
My first serious relationship. Oh, where should I go back to? Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah, 18, 19, that kind of stuff, a bit older.
Yeah.
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 Do you think you understood women?
No. And still, I'm always surprised. They always shock me every day.
Do you think you understand women now, though?
Mm.
Obviously better than then, but...
Better than then, yes, but still... But it's this mystery about them for us men that makes it interesting. But somehow, if you understand that they are different than you, you kind of got the grasp of how to treat a woman. But if you compare them like me and you right now, men, when we talk to each other, no, you haven't got any clue about what and how to handle a woman. But it's our ego that steps in between. So if you push the ego aside and accept a woman as a woman, then it's, and that she's totally different than a man, and you have to treat her in a different way, then you can have a clue about how to treat it. And the more you practice, the more you're good at it. I practice with my wife. I practice with my ex. I practice with my daughter. And I keep on practice with the wife woman version of the woman to me. But I forgot and I neglected that I had sisters that I had to treat also. And I forgot I have a mother also who's a woman that I had to treat as a woman as well. So this is something that I'm still learning also to adapt.
What do you think is the easiest one to learn? The mother, the sister, the daughter, the wife?
They're all the same.
They're all equally as challenging.
They're all equally challenging.
But the difference with a mum, though, is that you have that this non-negotiable, I love you no matter what.
Yes.
No matter what.
And she loves you also unconditionally because you're her son or you are hers. So it's different. And they don't live with you on day-to-day basis most of the time if you're married.
Mm-hmm.
So... the challenge, I would say, is more with the wife because you see her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see your mom quite often. You're not in contact with your mom as you are with your wife.
Of course.
So the challenge part is more the wife. But again, if you're good with your wife, you're probably going to forget about how to handle the rest.
Well, let's talk about this for a second because you and I both have been divorced.
Yeah.
So we've both been married before and got that one wrong. And I look at that and I got married at the age of 26 and I think to myself, that's way too young for a man to be married to anyone. And part of me thinks that men shouldn't be allowed to get married until they're 40, until they've grown up.
But is it growing up? Because I got married at the first time when I was 27, so almost similar. But I think it's because of that experience, I am who I am today with my current wife. If I wouldn't go through this experience of failure with my ex, I wouldn't have fixed and figured it out with my second marriage.
So you changed as a person, as a husband from one wife to the next. You became a different person in some ways.
Absolutely. And I almost lost my second marriage because of me not admitting that I needed to change. The moment I realized that I'm going to lose my second wife, well, the second experience, my current wife, who are totally different than the first one. So she is from a different nationality and different background entirely compared to my ex, but both they have the same behavior. So I was like, this cannot be true. This cannot be that women are really the same to this level. Both different upbringings, but yet the same behaviors of or reaction to what I'm doing to do to both. So I was like, because I used to hear it from my ex, like, I am your mirror. So if I'm behaving bad with you, it's because of you. So I was like, okay, let me take this and grasp it for a moment. Is it really me? So can I admit that I have to change something? And I did. And I started seeing good results with my current wife. And the more I practice, the more I see better results and kept on going. And, you know, practice makes perfect. So, yes, the relationship is being healthier, better. The connection and the bonds between me and my current wife is extremely extraordinary, I would say, and like an example for an ideal marriage to everyone. It's because of that. So that's probably the reason, is like I had this failure where I had to see myself as the reason behind this failure and admit it and apply the changes and move on. So
you took yourself as the common denominator because the behavior was the same from both wives.
Yeah.
And so you took on the responsibility yourself.
Yes.
There's lots of men out there that wouldn't be happy about believing that it was on them.
That's the thing where it takes a man a big, big moment to step out of his pride and accept that he is the reason. And it's, for boys, it sounds impossible to do, but for men, they know what I'm talking about. So that's why. And the ideal marriage scenario was my father and my mother. And I saw and I remembered like how my father was treating my mom till today, which made him the perfect husband for my mom and the perfect father for us and the perfect man outside. So for us men, we think we grow up as like, no, we are the men, we are the providers, women have to obey us, women have to serve us at home, you need to cook, you need to clean, I will do the providing. And then he's a man at home by being like muscular and like shouting and everything, but he's a cat outside. And the moment he needs to be a man, like, or in a fight, for example, let's say, or in an argument where he needs to man up and show his real manhood, masculinity outside. No, he's a small cat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the vice versa, like it's the opposite. So you need to be that cat inside the house with your wife and then the real lion outside, not to bring the lion inside the house.
Do you think Arab men are different to Western men in how they perceive, stereotypically,
yeah,
how they perceive relationships and marriage?
Yes.
And what are the key differences?
They are protectors. They are. They understand that men have to provide financially and not accept a woman to provide anything or bring anything in the table. This is the biggest difference between the Arab men and the Western men. I think more in the Western part, men accept a woman to provide and like they share the income 50-50. For an Arab man, this is kind of an insult. No. And it's because of our religion also, Islam, is like we men, we provide money. Also, I say this like our money, my money is our money. A man's money is all of us, for the mom, the wife, the kids, the house, everyone. But if she works and brings money, it's her money. No one's allowed to touch it. I'm not allowed to touch it. But if she wants to favor, like for a gift, participate here, in moments, it's a debt. I have to pay back. So, for example, in...
Like for like or in another way? Like, it's a debt, it's $1,000. Is it a debt as in I need to repay $1,000, or is it $1,000 of something?
Either this or that.
Yeah.
Something. But it's a debt. Like, yeah. I won't be accepting it, and that's it. So, for instance, while I was finishing my master's degree in bodybuilding and nutrition, which was a very important degree for me to complete, I was having some amount of money kept for the last exam for me to get the certificate. We moved houses, so my wife wanted curtains at home, and I didn't have that much money to do the curtains at home. We moved to a bigger house instead of an apartment, so we were exposed to our neighbors, so I saw the importance of that. So I paid the money that I saved then. But a few weeks later, it was my 40th birthday, so my wife prepared a gift, which was a very memorable gift until today for me. It's an envelope, which mentioned there to be used only for your master's degree. The amount of money that I spent for the curtains, she saved it, she didn't use it, and she gave it back to me, which means she paid from her pocket the money for the curtains. But this was a debt for me because she helped me pay something which I was supposed to be doing, not her, for the curtains. And the moment I finished my master's degree, I gave her back the money, as in money, and much more beyond that.
The world changed from how it used to be years ago. When my father went to work, he went to work. Mum was the one that brought up the kids and looked after the house. That world then changed with women fighting for equality and the right to be able to go to work and be equal to men. And then in later years, them wanting the same pay as men for doing the same job. And we've seen that through the West been fought for. If you apply the examples that you just give and then introduce this drive from women to want to be equal in so many ways, that looks to me like it's something that will collide and clash. How does that get managed?
I always say that men today are weaker than they were before. It's not because men are physically weak or mentally weak. It's because men stayed where they are and women have evolved to be this working woman. Because most of the women are nowadays single, single mom, working, fighting for the income for to survive in this world, in this harsh world. It's not a bad thing. The bad thing is that one side has grew and the other side stayed where they are. So for me, for example, I was talking to one of my clients the other day about this relationship topic, is that when we want a woman, our crush at the beginning, we fight for her. We do everything to reach to accept, to get her accepting us. And the moment we have her in a house, married together, we cool down. This is our comfort zone. This is where we relax, where we sit back and say, I did it. That's the moment the man kills himself and he's going to die slowly in the eyes of the woman and in the eyes as a husband or as a father in the house. The way that I see it is that the man has to continue from this moment to grow even more and more, to grow and go fight and develop himself. And this is extremely narcissistic here. He has to work for his body. He has to work for his mind. He has to work for his career. He has to work for his knowledge. Every aspect that he can develop himself, he has to work on it. This is going to put the man in a different state of mind. This is going to put a man in a different point of a version of a man for her, for his wife. The wife is going to see him that this man is not stopping. This man is always growing. And no matter how much I'm going to grow, there's only limits for a woman to grow, whether in a career, whether in business, whether in if she's an entrepreneur, wherever she may be, there's limited capabilities for a woman to grow. There's always something that's going to stop her from growing. She's going to be tired. She's going to be like, I cannot handle this stress. But let her grow. And this growth of a woman is only going to feed your growth because it's not competition, but it's nice to have a woman to grow beside you because later on, the kids are going to be strong and healthy. Your kids are going to grow in an environment where both of you and the mother are extremely strong, powerful, capable of fighting this world, yet together.
Okay, but then we look at this You say the men stagnate. For them to grow, well, they need to grow physically. They need to earn more money. Is it measured in more financial success?
All aspects.
Yeah.
All of them. All of them. He has potential to grow everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You have potential to grow from where you are today,
mm-hmm.
physically, for example. You can change financially, grow even more. You can grow by knowledge, read more books, and do the podcast today that you are, meet different people. You're growing on day-to-day basis. This is something that a man can do, and always there's no limits. The limits is the sky for him. So he needs to keep growing, but not stay where he is in his comfort zone, whether in a job and then think about retirement and then sit at home feeding the babies, taking care of the babies or the kids and playing with them. No, the man should not be with the kids unless they are in their teenagehood. This is where my father introduced himself to me to be my best friend when I became a teenager. He started teaching me what a man should do. But the rest was my mom's job.
Okay. Do you think that times have changed things? And I mean this from, you go back medieval times, hunter-gatherers, you know, there was clear roles and responsibilities that existed in the tribe, should I say, back then. Then you move forward, and as time has evolved, I understand where you say that men haven't grown, but if a man reads more books, he's growing, you can't see that. You're saying that men have stagnated by doing nothing, and women have evolved.
Yeah. But it's not just one aspect, not just reading books and sitting at home and not being able to feed your family, for example, and not just going to the gym and building your body and not being able to feed your family, or not just building a career and you're rich and you don't know how to speak to a woman, you don't know how to, like you're an ignorant person, but just have money. So these are the different aspects that you have to touch base on every single one of them and maintain a certain decent level of progression on day-to-day basis on every single one of them, not just one.
Do these types of people that have grown and have evolved, the reality is they're a very small minority.
Yes.
Like
they are
a really
people.
Tiny minority. Yeah. Because most people I call a sheeple.
Yeah.
Their followers, most people are what I call just enoughers.
Yes.
Okay, they do just enough. And that's the vast majority of society.
And that's where people fail, and that's where relationship gets broken. It's not because of the women are evolving, it's because of the men, they're not being men. And by being a man, they don't understand how to behave with a woman. So again, don't bring that lion at home and become that lion and you're a cat outside. It's the opposite way around. Feed the cat, but don't forget to feed the beast outside. Be the beast, be the that monster you should be outside and go fight outside, but don't bring the monster inside the house. Keep him outside. Keep him tamed outside.
Do you believe you're an alpha male?
I hope I am.
Do you believe in Andrew Tate?
In certain points, very few.
Tell me what about Andrew Tate you think is good.
The way he woke up men a little bit in a different way, which took some courage for a man to go and say it out loud. But there are certain things that I don't like about him. The way he shouts for me is like a different vibration. I don't understand.
Just stay with the bits that you like about him start with. I just want to know what it is that resonates with you. Yeah, he was bold. He stood up and he spoke.
Yes.
You know, he said what lots of people might have been thinking but were afraid to say.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah. This is courage. I mean, this is the only thing I would say.
Yeah?
Yeah. And how he speaks about his success and motivation in a certain way, how to be athletic. But for me, he's a little bit too much in terms of being an alpha male or an idol man for younger boys and how they look at him. Because this is not the right direction for being a man. This is not the right direction for being a husband. This is not the right direction for being a successful father. And I don't want my son, for example, to be followed by, like, to be following the steps of Andrew Tate. I don't want him to be shirtless in public to tell me what to hear. Even if he's saying facts, I would not listen to him.
Mm.
So having a cigar, misbehaving, he's a man probably, but not a gentleman in today's world.
Yeah. Okay.
A gentleman has to be like you're coming from the UK, the gentleman, we have certain things that we, going inside, for example, with a hat, it's not allowed. You have to take off your hat. These certain morals or behaviors that makes a gentleman different from a man does not exist with him. We need to teach the men, the boys today, about how to become a gentleman, how to behave in public, how to talk, how to speak when spoken to, not just many, many, many things.
I grew up and you grew up in a world where we weren't consumed by devices. Our lessons and education came from being in a classroom, then dad and mum, uncles,
yes,
you know, teaching you stuff and teaching you how to compete and teaching you how to be respectful. But nowadays, kids are just literally locked into their mobiles or their iPads for hours and hours on end. And it doesn't look like it's slowing down. We've just seen Apple Vision Pro come along and, you know, how great that's going to be for everybody. That just means that we're going to be locked into a virtual world even more.
It's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a double-edged sword. I told my wife the moment Apple announced the Vision Pro, and funny that you brought this subject here, because I'm going to highlight what I'm going to say about this Vision Pro, for example, because it's a new thing which is going to probably change the direction where the world is going and predicts the future in a different way. Just like me and you, when internet was introduced to our lives, how our parents looked at us and how they looked at internet at that time. It's the same way how we both right now sitting and discussing Vision Pro,
yeah,
for the future generation. Whether we like it today or not, whether we know what are the risks and the benefits out of it, we have to accept it that it's coming. AI, for example, it's coming. The idea for me, for example, how I have to behave with my sons, my daughter, how to teach them is I want them to be knowing exactly the right and wrong by me introducing myself to this new technology. I want to know everything about it before they do or as they know. So it's a similar language that we are going to both speak as we grow up together. As they grow up together, I don't want to be disconnected just like my father got disconnected from me, for example, or my mother got disconnected from me the moment the computers started with the mouse. I still remember my mom holding the mouse, trying to teach her. The mouse was flying all over the screen. So there was a miscommunication. This technology created a huge gap between the father and the son. I don't want that gap to be happening there. So I am going to learn to be able to guide them, to be able to be the friend for the son, to show him, son, this is nice, but just be careful. Like, whatever you're talking about, this is dangerous. I am aware of danger, whether in this technology or that technology, but I can at least speak to him in his language, because it's going to be a total new to the different language. It's going to be a total new different experience that if I don't develop myself to learn and accept what changes are coming to us, I'm going to be far away from my son, from my kids. I'm not going to be able to teach them, to guide them at least. He's going to know more than me for sure, but at least I have a clue. This is good, this is bad. The rest is yours.
I want to go back to relationships here, because I think that you have a strong opinion of how a man should treat a woman, what it should look like in the home, and to me it's very alpha. Okay, in my relationship with my wife, I want my wife to do more of the things that I like to do, and so she has her interests, which are very different to mine, and she's like, everything that you do has the word adventure before you even start, and I'm like, yeah, you know. Whether it's skydiving, whether it's climbing a mountain, whether it's skiing, doesn't matter what it is, you just want adventure. All the time you want adventure. And I think men do crave that. It's kind of like it can, you know, it reinforces our manhood almost, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the fact. But I want to create memories with my wife,
yeah,
by doing those types of things together. I don't want to do those things with other people, because I then don't have the opportunity to share that with her.
Yeah.
But she's like, you're nuts. I'm a lady.
Okay.
I'm not doing that. And I'm like, yeah, but if you try it, you'll like it. I believe a really good relationship is where you're a team.
Yes.
Okay. And whether, you know, the one provides or the other, I mean, obviously the man traditionally provides, that's not really my driver, because my mum and dad got divorced when I was 7 years old and my dad went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And I watched my mum from nothing build and become successful commercially. So I've watched this woman who I idolize has gone on to become successful in her own right, build a successful career without any help from anyone. So I look at that and I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
But when I look at relationships, I think relationships should always be about having things in common and being teams. All right. And so do you find that in relationships that it has to be the way that you described it? Or do you think the way I describe it should count too?
I always say that marry your best friend, because people nowadays think love is the rainbows and the pink
unicorns and stuff.
It's not true. Marry your best friend, because I always say to men and women, because on the moment you marry your best friend, the best friend is going to know everything. You know how to keep a best friend. You know how the best friend is going to be upset, how to make him make things up. But me and my wife right now, she pulled me away from my friends, my true best friends outside, because I enjoy talking to her more. I enjoy having time with her more. I have very few boundaries in our relationship between me and her. So I can tell her anything that I used to tell the guys outside. The acceptance of this in the relationship brings the two together with more strings to be closer, tightening the relationship, the two together. If I go out, I prefer to go out with my wife. So whatever she may like, okay, today is your choice. We go to this place. Let's do this activity today. We went on her birthday to, she likes snowboarding. I never went to the mountains.
Like your wife, she likes snowboarding.
She's good. She's good at snowboarding. I haven't done any sorts of snowboarding or skiing.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm 43, but I'm rigid. Let me hire a coach. We'll go to the mountains. You go snowboard. I will learn, and I'll try to bring this differences of us closer to each other. I'll work on myself. I'll try to do it. I'll try to impress you. So I know I'm not going to be as good as her, but it's something that we had fun together. When she saw me doing the pizza and to control a stiff stick going down the mountains. But yeah, it was fun, and we had fun and laughed about it. And then we went after that, for example, to the sauna place where there's a frozen lake outside. For me as a man, okay, you prove that you're a good snowboarder. Let me prove you how a proper man I am. I'm going to go and jump in this cold lake. So she was like, wow, I'm Russian. I don't know how to do this, but you came from the Middle East to do this. I did it a few times. So it's fun. It's like closing the gaps between the two, having a friend beside you, despite the fact that you are two different. You like skydiving, for example. She doesn't like that. But try to play her games and let her play yours. Women like to play with the Barbie dolls. We like to play football, for example, or we like to play games. Nowadays, nobody plays football outside the streets. So closing the gaps and jumping into each other's playground area probably brings the two closer together. And that's what I try to do. I don't know if I'm doing a good job, but it seems that she's happy.
50% of marriages end in divorce.
No, it's because of men. Because it starts with a woman, right? And the moment you take a woman serious when she's fighting and throwing bad words to you, this is the moment it touches the man's ego, and then the man reacts. If a man reacts when a woman is angry, this is the end of the game.
Everyone watching this, every female that's watching this right now,
gonna love me. I know the men are
going, they're in the car driving to work going, yes. Yes.
But that's reality, because the woman, when she grows...
Is it?
It is.
Come on.
Yes, it is.
Come on.
I'm telling you this, and I'm already with an argument with my wife. I had to sleep in my room last night. But still, I know my duties, and I know what I'm going to have to do when I go back. I am not wrong.
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Let's take an extreme example. So you just said.
Yes.
I said 50% of marriages end in divorce, and you said it's because the man.
Because of the man.
Okay. Let's imagine the wife's the one that's cheated. Is it still the man's fault?
No, this is different.
Ah, so it's not always the man.
No, this is different, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, if we bring the cheating part to the table, then this is...
Okay, so let's eliminate cheating. Yeah, so yeah. The irreconcilable differences, let's put it down as that title, because that's one that's used in the courts.
Yes.
Okay, irreconcilable differences. That's the man.
Yes.
Four.
The moment he's a rigid wall and bounce back every single ball that throws at him harder or the same way, that's when the relationship is going to break. I hope I
get
brought
it.
The proper analogy for this. You have to be soft. You have to be accepting whatever she's going to throw at you from whenever she's angry. And you and I know both what a woman may say when she's angry at you. Whether you're right or wrong, men are always wrong. Women are always right.
Gee, man, every female, oh man, all my audience are consuming this, that are women, all of you women out there, you love him, don't you? You just love him.
That's reality. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm saying this, but it hurts me as a man, but it's my wife. The ship, we're both on one ship together. If this is going to take this sacrifice from me to make this ship go further together, I'm ready to do it.
I'm laughing thinking
outside,
about it. Mate.
See, outside this, outside the relationship, no. I put on back my cape.
I'm just thinking that all these guys that might be watching this right now think when their wife says, "How was Spencer's podcast this week?" Oh, you don't know what is that. That wasn't a very good one. Yeah.
but deep inside, we know this. This is the only way to save a marriage or to have a happy ending marriage together for forever, which is a good thing. And plus, this small sacrifice that you're going to do is going to create a woman that's going to be happy. And trust me, the happiness that's going to come from a woman is going to give you a peace of mind, happiness for you, and you're going to move on, going to work, going to meet outside, whoever you're going to be outside. But you're going to be like having this energy that you don't know where it came from. Let's revise the thing. You told her off. You shouted at her. You didn't accept what she said. She's upset. She's angry. You're frustrated, thinking that you managed to contain her. No, she's a bad woman. She didn't accept what I said. I'm right. I told her off. You're going to go back with a different feeling. Which one would you choose? A peace of mind or a happiness? Or
the former over the latter in a heartbeat, yeah.
So, would you take this sacrifice? Would you swallow it?
There's no option to, is there?
No.
It makes sense only to do that.
No.
You got me there. I'll let you have that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about your fitness journey.
Yes.
I want to understand the challenges you faced, where you were, what prompted you to focus on it in the way you did. You know, I'm just so you've got some context here. I go to the gym every day, 5 till 6 in the morning every day, for my mind, not for my body. I go there to work out because I know I feel 100% better after an hour in the gym than I do without going to the gym. I never wanted to be, you know, a big, muscly, six-pack type of guy. It was never a focus of mine. However, a few things happened recently. One, I did a High Rocks fitness challenge with my daughter last weekend, I think it was.
Yes.
You heard about it, maybe. Yeah. And we competed together for the first time, and I realized how strong she was, and it was a fantastic, beautiful bonding experience, fantastic fun. She's 24 and I'm 53, and we did it in only 1 hour, 20 minutes, and we were very happy. So that demonstrated to me, you know, the fact that I was relatively fit. The second thing that I think is important to remember is that somebody at the beach, about one of my wife's friends at the beach, about 3 months ago, I was sat at the beach and she said, "What have you been up to?" And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Your shoulders are so defined." And I then stood there like that with my hands on my chest and my hips like that. What shoulders are you talking about? But all of a sudden I was just scared. You look fantastic, Spencer. Well done.
And suddenly Spencer's favorite workout is shoulders.
I only do shoulders now. Every day, we need to do more of this. So all I do now is shoulders. So I'll work on something else next. I think my thighs were all right. Maybe my butt needs some work. I'm waiting for a butt compliment to come.
Yeah.
But tell me about what happened to you. Because I post every day on social media going to the gym. Not because I want to. I don't enjoy making that video at 4:30 in the morning every morning. But I do want people to change. I do want people to improve. I do want people just to get a bit better. So what was it that triggered and created the drive for you to get into this fantastic shape you're in now?
I've always been fit, but I never focused on being fit. It's just because I was young and probably athletic in certain ways. I used to do taekwondo, then martial arts. And then after that, in university, I had to show off in front of the girls, as I told you, like it's the only opportunity to meet a woman.
Peacock.
I wouldn't be able to do a split, like a Van Damme split at that time, in front of the girls to show off and impress them. So I had to move and change from this field of sports to bodybuilding. And I was always enjoying the like proper shoulder, broad shoulders and tiny waist. And then, the moment I got married, when I moved to UAE, I was like, okay, yeah, that's it. That's the reason why I failed in my first relationship, is like I let myself go. I didn't work on myself physically. We're talking here because we're talking about fitness journey. So I started gaining weight. I started putting on belly fat. I started losing my broad shoulders. I started losing strength. I get tired quickly. My trousers were bigger. And it's not something that I noticed gradually. No, it's one day we were in a staycation in one of the hotels. I go on a scale and I know my body weight when I was fit. And I was surprised to see 3 digits. I was like, what is this? I look at myself in the mirror and I started looking really and seeing the person in front of me. Who am I? Why did I let myself go? So I decided from that moment, no, there's going to be a change. And the change started with the diet and the change started controlling, because I knew somehow the basics of why I became like this, what I've been doing wrong. It's not just the absence of the workout and going to the gym, but it's letting myself indulge with the different sweets, cuisines here, eating late at night, not being able to move. So I've lost 25 kgs in the matter of 2 years. But then I saw myself like I'm very skinny. Everyone noticed, but everyone's asking me like, are you sick or you're okay? I mean, wow, you changed. You were fat, but now I didn't like myself. Mm-hmm. When I take off my shirt, stand in front of the mirror, no, this is not me. I don't like it. Can I improve myself? Yes. So by the age of 30, I had my son, my very first son, Yusuf. He was 1 year old. I was speaking to another colleague of mine that was similar age, and he has also same son. And I was like, let's go to the gym. Like, yeah, okay, let's go. So we started going to a building gym at that time. And I put on my phone a picture of a guy having 6 packs. I told him, this is my target. He looked at me, he's like, Saif, you're crazy. We're already too old. We are 30. You have a son. That's it. Life is over. Well, what? You couldn't do it when you were 20s. Do you expect to do it now? And this triggered me. I was like, no. I'm going to do it. I didn't tell him, but I was talking to myself. I am going to do it, and I'm going to prove to you and to everyone who doubts the ability of doing it, I'm going to do it. And I did it when I'm 40. I stood on my very first competition, probably the last. By the age of 40, which is in the master's category, in my best physique ever, which I worked for 10 years, extremely hard, experiencing the difficulties, the knowledge, going through every single scientific thing behind it, trying to learn, adapt, and practice, until I started adapting this new career as a coach as well and helping other people. I was trying to really literally help. My body changed, my mind changed, my confidence grew. I started proving to people who doubted me that it is possible. I'm 43 today. My next competition, we already assigned it, is going to be when I'm 50. So I'm going to be my best version in my 50s and in my 60s and so on. So it's a never-ending story for me. It's a challenge that I need to prove to myself, first of all, to my kids, as their father is a fit guy, and also for the people who follow me, because I have a big bunch of people who look up to me, and they, and other also the haters who want me to stop and fail, or especially after adopting for the last 5.5 months this carnivore diet, everyone wants to see me how I'm failing.
So let's understand, for the benefit of the audience, what advice can you give someone that's in that place? They're kind of like in a bit of a rut. They're not where they want to be. They've looked in the mirror. They're disappointed with themselves. But it's too overwhelming. It's too much, you know, is the answer, oh, maybe I should just, I've seen this Ozempic advertised online. Maybe I should do that. What's my quick fix? How do I get going?
Find the reason why you need to start, because I can help people reach to their goals, but they have to have that spark inside. This spark inside only comes from within. So you cannot create that spark inside the person. So look at yourself where you are today, whether a man or a woman. Tomorrow, in the next year, in the next 5 years, you're not going to be the same if you're going to stay where you are. Your health is going to fall apart. Your body is going to fall apart. So are you going to do something today? Because trust me, tomorrow or the next year is just around the corner. Time flies. So it's the moment you take the decision. Don't say tomorrow or next week. Say right now. Stand up from where you are today. Stand up, move, go do something, and don't quit. Start today and don't quit. Just keep on going. Small baby footsteps will take you to your goal. But sitting on your couch watching TV with your popcorn or whatever you have in your hand right now is not going to take you anywhere. So starting right now, taking a goal, but just start. Maybe no goal, just start. Go. I tell people also, like, go sit down in the gym. Just watch people for the first week. Don't do anything. Sit in the cafe, have a cup of coffee or whatever you want to have. Just watch the people there. You're going to be inspired. You're going to be motivated. Change the environment from the couch that you're sitting at to an environment where there are active people working on themselves. You might be inspired. You're going to make something. And these baby steps will only make you the next year a different person, and the year after, so on and so forth. So just start. Move yourself today and start.
So the start comes after the why.
Yeah.
And the why is the big thing here.
The why is the big thing.
So
the why is the biggest thing, and it's how are you going to be next year?
A place of pain or a place of pleasure?
It's always from pain. The fear, for example, of pain, if you're not in pain already. Because I, for example, don't want to be old and not being able to stand from my chair without a stick or putting my hands on the edge to help myself up. No, I want to stand up like I'm standing up today. So to get there is to keep on working on myself today. You don't need to go crazy. You don't need to be a bodybuilder. You don't need to look and take all the supplements. It's just easy movements. Work those muscles. Those muscles need attention. And trust me, those muscles are going to keep you young and strong when you grow up. They're going to last. But if you're going to leave them, you're going to lose them.
A lot of people will go to the gym, but they won't pay any attention to what they should and shouldn't eat. They'll know that there are good and bad things, but they can't stop the cravings. And so they go and work out. And I was that guy for a long time that was just like in the gym and couldn't understand why I wasn't losing weight, felt relatively fit and healthy. And you know, I heard the saying, you can't out-exercise a bad diet, which obviously I know. I've changed my nutrition. I eat much healthier now than I did before. I've lost a bunch of weight, and so that's really positive. You said to me before we started on camera about the carnivore diet. I have got so much interest in this, you wouldn't believe. I've done so much research into it. I'm questioning whether I start. There'll be a lot of people out there who will have heard the Atkins diet, the carnivore diet, the this diet, the that diet, and here's another diet, you know? What is it about the carnivore diet that makes such a big difference?
Do you want me to define the carnivore diet for the people to know what the difference is?
Yeah, it's probably, sorry, okay. That's probably a good place to go.
The carnivore diet is an animal-based diet, which means the fat and the meat that comes from the animal and the organs and the milk productions, for example, the dairy. So that's it. No vegetables, no fruit, no fat from any plants-based whatsoever. It's different than the keto diet, although it's driven by the keto energy, which is inside our body, driven by the fat that we consume, which is the saturated fat, which comes from the animals. So the first thing that I've noticed ever since I adopted the carnivore diet from last September 1st till today is the energy level. I wake up every day 4 a.m. to go to the gym, and my energy level from 4 a.m. until I sleep at 9 is exactly the same. It doesn't bounce up, and it doesn't go down, crashes after any meal. I am like I am today to you with this energy till the whole day until I sleep. Energy, and most of the people who are on the carnivore diet or on the keto diet will know what I'm talking about, because the moment your body changes from glucose as a source of energy to ketones, which is the fat energy, it's a totally different energy. It might take some time for a person to adapt, depending on how much you are addicted to carbohydrates before adapting the carnivore diet. So probably if you're a person who consumes a lot of carbohydrates, I would say go gradually until you start, your body starts knowing that you're going to be changing towards the fat energy. So this is the first thing that I've noticed. The second thing was I had always been careful with my diet. Low carbs, I eat healthy, I eat rice, I eat potatoes sometimes. Vegetables was very important. So the first thing that I noticed is like I was bloated. Bloatiness went away. Flat stomach, and I was like enjoying. I don't need to, as a coach walking in the gym, I don't need to suck my tummy in to show off that I have like a small waist. No, I started being relaxed that this is a normal thing for me to do. So this was another shocking point for me, which is very interesting. The third point was I don't crave to eat much. Like I'm not hungry. The moment I have my proper meal and I consume that meal, I stay satiated for a very long time until my next meal. So I used to adapt to the intermittent fasting. So when I started being on a carnivore diet, this helped me even more because the amount of meals that I have were less and I could squeeze them in a very shorter time. That was the third point. And many other points which helped with sleep and how deep my sleep was. I like to track my sleep and how deep I go in the sleep and how my light sleep is, my REM sleep, my non-REM sleep. This helped me a lot. I used to take magnesium to fall into that deep sleep, but I even stopped that. Supplements, I don't take any kind of supplements. Going to the bathroom, I go once, small amounts, that's it. And yeah, it's very comfortable, easy on the pocket as well. You know that you're eating good stuff. It might sound expensive, but if you look at what I used to spend on supplements and on meal plans, I'll take probably one meal outside and then the other meal at home, and it's easy to eat.
Do you ever cheat?
No.
So you can't eat any sugar?
No, for me, sugar, I stopped sugar for the last 13
years.
For me, people,
though, that's, for a lot of people, that's a big sacrifice.
You know? Fat stops you from craving.
Fat stops you from craving the sugar, so you don't have sugar craving?
No, not at all. I've never been on sugar for the last 10 years, as I remember.
Yeah, I have, and you don't look as good as me.
Yeah. It's because of the beard.
Okay, that's interesting. Jordan Peterson's on the carnivore diet. He's obviously raves about how it got rid of the depression. He's psoriasis, I think he was suffering from, and other autoimmune disease. Yeah. Joe Rogan spoke about it really positively about how after 4 weeks he's lost 12 pounds. So he's had weight loss and he feels great. I don't know anyone that's done it that I've consumed their content where they haven't had good things to say about it. So there must be something about it.
You should listen to Dr. Sean Baker, as I told you. I had him last week on my podcast to talk about a few things. And the absence, for example, of fiber, which is very interesting for many people, is like, how can you not have fiber. And he talks about that as well. He talks about, for example, I have a coach who started copying slightly my carnivore diet journey, but he's diabetic type 1, which means his pancreas does not secrete insulin. So he has to take insulin from outside. He used to take 80 units of insulin per day, which is a normal range for anyone who's having diabetes type 1, to 5.
80 to 5?
From 80 to 5.
Just because of carnivore diet?
He's not 100% carnivore diet, but he removed carbohydrates from his diet, and he's only eating protein and fat. But his sources of fat could be animal-based or plant-based, like avocado or olive oil. But it's interesting to know that carbohydrates is not essential, and you don't need to consume carbohydrates to survive. So you can live with a carnivore diet for a longer period of time, and it is healthy.
Talking to you is like talking to an encyclopedia. It's
a small one.
Safe. It's been great having you on the show today. I think we've covered quite a few areas here. I really appreciate your honesty, and I really appreciate you being somebody that speaks from experience rather than somebody that's read a book and wants to give everyone their opinion on stuff. So thank you so much for coming to spend some time with us today.
Thank you very much for your questions and the diversity of questions you've asked me, like tapped into areas that probably I haven't spoken to. So you asked me before the show started, is this going to be a good one, or how to make it a good one? It's definitely a good one.
Good man. Thanks
thank
so
you very much.
Thank
you.